Okay, can everyone hear me? We had a few little sound technical difficulties, but I think we are working now. We just returned from a closed session at 5 o'clock. I'll ask our city attorney to report on any items.
Yeah, there's no reportable action.
Okay, well, thank you. We'll move on and call the meeting to order for our regular session. We're going to have a Pledge of Allegiance by a special guest this evening, and I'm going to invite Lauren Smith up. And our chief will help maybe with a little bit of an adjustment. He's about an inch or two shorter there than... Welcome, Lauren. Now, you are with an organization called American Heritage, is that correct? Could you tell us a little bit about what that is?
It's for girls ages 6 to 18 to learn about our heritage and become a woman of God.
Well, thank you for being here, and you're being promoted, I hear. And what is especially noteworthy is she has to go through various experiences. So, of course, she visited the Regan Library, and for the finale, she is revisiting a city council meeting in Atascadero. So, very good. We would like you to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. We'll take your direction.
Ready? Salute. Please begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Lauren. I'll take it from here. First item is a roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Here.
Councilmember Kelly?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. First item is approval of the agenda. I am going to move the presentation number 2 to the last place. Other than that, I'd entertain a motion.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We are honored to have several proclamations this evening and some updates. Of course, our community organizations do so much in our community on our behalf. We're going to begin with a proclamation recognizing April 2015 as Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. I've asked Councilwoman Roberta Fonzie to take that.
Thank you. I think truly every month should be the Month of the Child if they are the future for our community. Whereas the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month is a time to recognize that children's opportunities are our responsibilities and to commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. And whereas the Atascadero City Council recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for that child to learn, and the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in school and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. And whereas the activities of this month will provide an opportunity to acknowledge youth and early care and education programs and their dedicated staff, and whereas many community partners, including the San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council, First Five San Luis Obispo County, and Center for Family Strengthening, believe in a connected community working together to ensure children are the highest priority. And may we remember to listen and watch the children around us, to have patience and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Atascadero City Council is proclaiming April 2015 as the Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and April 11th as Day of the Child. Thank you.
Thank you. And I believe we have someone here to receive this proclamation. Well, maybe not. We will save that, and if someone comes in later, we may work to that. The next item is the SLO Regional Rideshare Bike Month update. We have a representative from San Luis Obispo Council of Governments. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor O'Malley, council members, viewers. My name is Peter Williamson. I'm the employer outreach coordinator at SLO Regional Rideshare. How many here are familiar with rideshare and our programs? Oh, good. Great. A few of you here. That's awesome. I want to go over a few of our programs. Basically, rideshare is your one-stop shop for transportation information. And our programs include SLO 511, which is the number you call or the website you visit for traffic conditions, trip planning, and any other transportation-related information. And then there's our Safe Routes to School program, which is to, of course, get our kids safely to school. We recently had a school assembly at Santa Rosa Elementary, a walk and bike school assembly, so that's pretty exciting. And there's our Know How to Go program, which is for persons with disabilities or the elderly who are looking for a new way to get around the county. And then there is my program, which is the Back and Forth Club. And this program is designed to help employers encourage their employees to smart commute, use alternative transportation through incentives and free services. And one of my goals, of course, is to help all applicable Atascadero employers implement a program that makes sense for them. And like I said, there's a variety of free services that will help them do that. Of course, this contributes to reduced parking problems and then, of course, reduced traffic congestion. So one of the services is an online trip matching software for employees to find carpools, vanpool, bike routes, and transit routes. And then we have ongoing sweepstakes that encourage employees. We provide employers access to the valuable commute data so they can report back GHG reduced and calories burned, that sort of thing. Access to a vanpool subsidy, free bike locker access throughout the county for employees, trip reduction plans for companies to help cater their programs and also get LEED certification. And then information on how to offer pre-tax benefits and subsidies that save the employer and the employee money. So there's a lot more, but hopefully I caught your attention with one of those. I'll put you to sleep. We run some major campaigns to get our communities involved. And so with no further ado, I invite you to join us during May, which is Bike Month. And we have some big plans, including over 50 events happening throughout the county. And this is a piece of what you can find in the Slow Life magazine. It has a good chunk of those events. I've put some copies on the back table so you can snag one on your way out and see everything that's happening. These are also available to see at rideshare.org/bike-month. And a couple events that I'll point out. Bicycle Day Mile, which is on Sunday, May 17th at 10 a.m. Please come out and join a ride from Atascadero to Templeton City Park and celebrate the eventual bike path that will be between Atascadero and Templeton. And I'll go ahead and let Mayor O'Malley maybe elaborate on that event a little bit more. There's also the Shell Creek Ride in Santa Margarita, so that's not too far from here. Then I'm especially excited to announce a Bike to Work Day, which is on May 15th. Join us from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. Here in Atascadero for a free celebratory bike breakfast hosted by the Atascadero Chamber. I believe it will be at the Chamber of Commerce, as well as K-Man, Solarponics, and Galaxy Theaters. And you don't have to be biking to work. You could just enjoy biking or drive over, or if you are a hotelier, you could promote this to your guests. We want everybody to come, and I'll get more as to why in a second. And we still have a lot of opportunity if you are a business owner or somebody, a community member that wants to get involved with this Bike to Work Day event. And I'm sure there's opportunity as well as with Cycle Day Mile. So reach out to me. My business cards are also on the back, so you can get that information. We're also doing challenges throughout the month on irideshare.org, including a business versus business challenge, a team versus team, a mano y mano, which is for people that bike a lot of miles. And then new this year, we have our school versus school challenge. So if you wanted to support Santa Rosa Elementary, you could track your rides at irideshare.org. And so the winning businesses and the individual get a trophy, and the winning school get a bike rack for free. So that's super exciting. Support the school of your choice. Obviously, support your business. And then also this year, how many people here have Bike Month t-shirts from previous years? Anybody? Oh, there we go. All right. Well, everybody here needs one. They're really comfortable. They're awesome shirts. And we're doing something new this year. As you record your trips on irideshare.org, trying to win that trophy, you at least get a consolation prize of a free t-shirt. So who doesn't love a free t-shirt? And if you do 5 to 19 trips, you get one shirt. And then if you do more than 20 trips tracked, you'll get the every month should be bike month. So that's new this year. And then also, We have the farmers market bike ballets that will be throughout the county. A couple to note would be the Pastoral Blaze on May 2nd and then Atascadero on May 20th. So avoid the hassle parking and bike to farmers market in May. And I'll conclude with our theme this year, which is Let's Get Visible. And this campaign is being supported through a variety of marketing channels, all of our events, and advertising. And here's a shot of our campaign website. One of the main focuses of this bike month theme is bike safety. And so we'll be working hard to educate both cyclists and drivers, which is why I encourage everyone to go out to the Bike to Work Day event. It's, you know, if you're driving and you want to learn a little bit about how to bike, or sorry, drive safely around bikers, it's important for both sides to understand how to get from point A to point B safely. And this campaign includes school assemblies, safety education, at events, advertising, and much more. So I invite you to join the community and bike somewhere safely during Bike Month. Let's get visible. And do I have any questions? I know that was a lot of information.
Sure.
I'd like to know how many bike trips Mayor O'Malley had to get his T-shirt.
He always has a lot of trips logged. Mayor O'Malley does a great
Just
job.
Just checking.
I'll answer that question. And, of course, there are those kind of bike. Did you have a, you know.
What is the path going to be of travel from Atascadero to Templeton? I know I did ride on the freeway one time, and vowed never to do that again.
Yeah, it's an interesting scenario right now. I am more of the public outreach arm, so I will leave that to a planner. But if you send me an email, grab one of my cards, then I can probably have somebody give you more of a specific answer there.
I'll follow up on that. But other council questions? Go ahead.
Could you tell us once again, when is the breakfast with the chamber?
That will be on May 15th, which is National Bike to Work Day.
Thank you.
Thank you. Well, we do have a Cycle de Mayo website, www.cycledemayo.com, and that'll have information about that event. And yes, I have had to ride my bike to get a shirt every time. And this started some time ago being a member of the San Luis Council of Governments. The first bicycle event I did was from Santa Rosa School all the way down to the lake with my granddaughter, and that's about what we could do downhill, certainly about what I could do. We really took it up a notch the year after and started Bike to Bites, if you all recall. And we went from all the way from our community center down to downtown. And it was very easy to get 300-plus kids out because we gave them free root beer, free pizza, and a free movie at Galaxy Theater. It's amazing how you can get folks to come out. Well, then we started getting a little more serious. My granddaughter was getting a little older. By the way, on that bike event, I started out leading the pack for about that long, and then those kids were gone. But this year, we're getting more serious. We have a Mayor Martin here, who I'll be introducing a little bit later on another item. But we have brought this up to make it a grown-up event, you might say. And it's not just Atascadero riding to Templeton. It's also Paso Robles riding to Templeton. And it's because we want to bring attention to the missing link, which is, as Councilman Kelly pointed out, it's a dangerous stretch, and it's really the last missing connector for bicycling in our county. When we want to do major events in the future, it's contingent upon getting that fixed. So it happens to be a high priority not only of Caltrans, State of California, but of our SLOCOG board. And so Debbie Arnold, Frank Meacham are very supportive of this. Mayor Martin and I are really kind of taking a lead on this, working with the Atascadero newly formed Bicycle Club and the Paso Robles Bicycle Club, working together on this. So we've kind of stepped back because we are letting the real bicyclers figure this out. But I think the route's going to be more like I used to go when I was in high school, kind of back through Templeton back roads and probably staying off the freeway. But we'll get that confirmed. I think the bike route will be on the website. So any other questions on that item? Well, thank you for being here tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. And there are Bike Month posters as well on the back, so you can support Bike Month and then reach out to me
about Perfect.
The Back and Forth Club and everything else. Thank you so much.
And save some T-shirts for everybody up here, because I know they're all going to be writing. So
absolutely.
Thank you. We did have our person come here for the recognizing the month of the child. And I'd like to invite you up to the lectern here. We do have a proclamation we've already read, but we want to give you an opportunity to share a little bit, and then Councilwoman Fonzie will present you the proclamation. Welcome.
I apologize for being late. Kind of one of the downfalls of childcare is you don't always get to get out of work on time.
We understand.
My name is Cindy Cypress. I'm a member of the Child Care Planning Council, and I run my own child care program here in town. And I brought my assistant, this is my lead assistant, Alex Elgin, and our little friend Grayson came to join us and kind of be here for us. I don't have a whole lot to say. We already did our Children's Day in the Plaza in San Luis Obispo. That was last weekend. It went very well. There were lots of attendees. I don't have a head count yet to know how many people were there. But it was very successful. And we have over here packets to give to everybody that actually has inclusions of some of the things that are going on in the month of the child this month, different events throughout the county.
Very good. Well, thank you. If you'd like to just come forward, we'll just stand back here and we can hand the proclamation to you here. If Councilman Fonz, you'd like to give that to you. And we...
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm so sorry.
But if you hold it and face the Atascadero News, he probably would like to take a picture of you. We'll just hide back here. Hi. Yeah. No, look at the camera.
Yeah. Not the weird people back
there. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you so much. And again, I apologize for being late.
Thank you.
Yes. Well, our next proclamation is regarding the Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we are presenting this to RISE. And this is an organization that is very active in the North County. They have offices in San Luis and here. Formerly was the North County Women's Resource Center. Many of us remember working with that. So I'm going to turn it over to their executive director, Ms. Adams, and let you tell us a little bit about this, and then we'll hear from one of your board members. But I should take a moment here and have Councilman Moreno read the proclamation. It'll cover some of the points of things that you guys work with.
Thank you, Mayor. Proclamation declaring April 2015 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month. Whereas Sexual Assault Awareness Month is intended to draw attention to the fact that sexual violence is widespread and has public health implications for every community member of San Luis Obispo County. And whereas rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment impact our community, as seen by statistics indicating that 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. And whereas 1 in 4 women on college campuses will experience a sexual assault while pursuing higher education. And whereas child sexual abuse prevention must be a priority to confront the reality that 44% of sexual assault survivors are under the age of 18. And whereas we must work together to educate our community about sexual violence prevention, supporting survivors, and speaking out against harmful attitudes and actions. And whereas staff and volunteers of RISE encourage every person to speak out when witnessing acts of violence, however small. And whereas with leadership, dedication, and encouragement, there is compelling evidence that we can be successful in reducing sexual violence in San Luis Obispo County through prevention education, increased awareness, and holding perpetrators who commit acts of violence responsible for their actions. And whereas the City of Atascadero strongly supports the efforts of RISE and of every citizen to actively engage in public and private efforts, including conversations about what sexual violence is, how to prevent it, how to help survivors connect with services, how to start by believing when a loved one discloses an experience, and how every segment of our society can work together to better address sexual violence. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Atascadero does hereby proclaim April 2015 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in Atascadero.
Thank you. Please share.
Thank you so much, Mayor O'Malley and Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, for reading that. You did a beautiful job. That's hard stuff and hard information to hear and talk about. And so we really appreciate the recognition of this month and the opportunity to talk about this. My name is Jennifer Adams. I am the Executive Director of RISE, and we were formerly the North County Women's Shelter and the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center. So currently we provide services to both victims of sexual assault and intimate partner violence. Last year, RISE helped almost 400 women, men, and children. So it's not just women, it's women, men, and children who had been affected by sexual assault or abuse. We also provided education services and self-defense classes to hundreds in our community in an effort to prevent this crime from happening in the first place. Our vision is to create a world that is free of sexual violence, and that means we have to be aware that it exists, and we have to be willing to take action. We invite county residents, and specifically residents of Atascadero, to participate in any one of our awareness-raising activities this month, including self-defense workshops. We'll be at the farmers market booths, and we are partnering with Cal Poly Safer's program for Take Back the Night at the end of the month. We are also excited to present our 13th annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. So I appreciate the Bike Coalition getting out there and biking miles. All we're asking is that you walk 1 mile. It is in high heel shoes, but it can be done, as Charles will attest to here. It's an event that, if you saw the paper, we just had our event in Paso Robles 2 weeks ago. It was very successful. We raised over $5,000. There were pictures in the Atascadero News and Paso Press that really showed what a great event it was. So it's one of those things. It's great for picture taking. It really gets people talking. And so it's a fun event, and it's family oriented, but it gets us talking and thinking about an issue that's really serious and really difficult to talk about. Most importantly, Sexual Assault Awareness Month is about honoring victims, whether they've told their story or not. We do this by raising awareness and destroying myths that make it difficult for survivors to come forth and to talk about their experiences. So in closing, I just want to thank and acknowledge our staff, our volunteers, and our board of directors for all the hard work that they do on a daily basis to end sexual assault. With that, I want to introduce our board member, one of our newest board members, Charles Borbeau, who would like to say a few words. And just finally, thank you so much for this proclamation.
Thank you, Jenny. And I just wanted to add a couple things. I'm really pleased and honored personally just to be on the RISE board. It does provide such an important service, both in the North County in terms of the women's shelters, and also countywide in the Sexual Assault Response Center. As you acknowledged up front, Mayor, so much happens in our community because of volunteers, and RISE is a largely volunteer-driven organization and has some phenomenal volunteers who are available 24 hours a day on the crisis hotline to handle people's needs. And it's unfortunate that we have a need for these kinds of services, but we most certainly do, and RISE does an excellent job of providing those services in the county, and especially in the North County here. In addition to the Walk a Mile that Jenny mentioned that took place in Paso Robles, of course, there is the one coming up at 25th in Mission Plaza. Not too late to sign up or to support somebody who is. And recently I had the fortune that I was challenged to walk around a Rotary meeting, and they were very generous and gave me $316 just for a short walk around the room. So we're hoping to do a lot better walking a whole mile. So hopefully some of you will come out for that or be supportive of that. And it's not in April, but on May 10th, actually the mayor, is hosting at his at the Portola Inn a Mother's Day gourmet picnic for RISE, and encourage people to sign up for that for either lunch on the lawn, or there's still a few tables left, I think, to sign up for, and encourage folks to do that. And thank you again, Mr. Mayor, for doing that for RISE. Thank you.
Thank you. And a word about the Mother's Day brunch in the carriage house and the picnic. This is something that really our community has come together on. If you look, we have some major sponsors that have really covered all the costs of this event. So all payment for any of these lunches all goes to RISE. And we had a desire to make this a fairly low-cost event and kind of a fun, low-key event, because I remember when we would try to go with a family with small kids, oh my goodness. I remember going to a restaurant that we had to wait an hour with small kids, and then when we finally got the food, they were out of half of it. So we started going and doing picnics as a family early on. So that's part of what we have led to do, something like this, to where it can be fairly low-key for a family, and to know that all the funds that are going to this is going to go to this organization. So a special thanks to Debbie Arnold, and every county supervisor has contributed towards this event, and Mayor Martin has joined us tonight. Steve and I are co-hosting this, another one of those Dos Alcaldes events. But I invited Steve up here specifically because Pastor Obels has done a proclamation also, and I'm inviting Mayor Martin to join me. And first, we'd like to present both proclamations to you, Jan, and then we'll ask the rest of our council to join us. But Mayor Martin, would you bring that on up? Okay, I'll try this mic, which is, I know is risky, because I kind of pace even when I'm sitting down, so they try to give me a mic that moves when I move, so I'll work at this. But thank you for joining us on those presentations. Next item on the agenda is our consent calendar, which are items considered to be routine and may not require much discussion. However, any item can be pulled for further discussion. So we'll first see if any member of the council would like to pull an item.
I'd like to pull A2.
A2 for more discussion. Any member of the public wishing to pull an item? Seeing none, I would entertain a motion on remaining consent calendar items.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, that was a motion by Councilman Fonzie. Was that seconded by Councilman Sturdivant or Councilman Kelly? Very good. Councilman Kelly, roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and have a little overview by staff on item 2.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Item A2 is basically reworking what was the Hazardous Materials Joint Powers Agreement, not an authority, that was created in the early 90s. Actually, I was on the founding member, one of the founding, yes? I was one of the founding members as a response member of the team, so I have a long history with the team. Some of you that have been around quite a while will remember that in the early 90s, there was a CSA, or a chlorosulfonic acid spill, on Cuesta Grade. The chlorosulfonic acid spill closed Cuesta Grade for 72 hours. San Luis Obispo County did not have a hazardous materials team. No one in the county had a hazardous materials team. The two nearest teams were out of Santa Barbara or Monterey County. The county at the time contracted with Santa Barbara County Fire Department to respond up and to mitigate the hazardous materials incident on Cuesta Grade. The Board of Supervisors and local government entities said, we can't handle this kind of interruption to commerce. We have to have our own hazardous materials team. So they tasked the county fire chiefs at the time with putting together a hazmat team. At the time, they created a JPA, which today, nowadays, the legal term would be defined as a joint powers agreement, authority. Back then, the term was joint powers agreement. So what happened is all these entities came together and agreed that this would be a good idea and that it would help us mitigate emergencies in the future of the hazardous materials nature. What we've since learned from county council and other attorneys is that JPA as an agreement is no longer a legal entity. It's certainly archaic at best. And so the attorneys that we've consulted with have suggested that we turn it into an MOU. What's unique about the joint powers agreement that's currently in place is it has a board of directors, which has a number of fire chiefs that sit on the board of directors. I'm actually the chairperson for the board of directors and have been for over 5 years. I've been on the board as a board of director or a liaison to the county hazmat team for over 15 years. Once my term as the response side ended, then I went into liaison and a board of directors supervising the team. What's happened the first decade of the team's existence is we received millions of dollars in grants to build the team and to equip the team. When we first started, we were so poor, San Luis Obispo Public Works Department loaned us a flatbed trailer, and we actually put a blue tarp on top of the flatbed trailer, put all of our hazardous materials equipment on the blue tarp, and then we folded the blue tarp around our hazmat gear, strapped it down with ropes, and it was actually called, its term on the radio was Burrito One, because it looked like a big blue burrito. A few years later, we were able to put together a trailer, and we moved all of our equipment into a trailer, all grant-funded. We probably have close to $1 million in meters, monitors, sensors, air analyzers, computer databases that can scan the spectrum of chemicals. We have one device in particular that can go downrange. It's called a PID, a photoionization detection unit. That one unit costs $60,000 for the unit when it's brand new. Requires calibration about every 2 months. The team has grown in its sophistication and in complexity. The interesting thing about the team is it was solely funded on grants, and even grants that would replace equipment that were originally purchased by grants. What's happened, unfortunately, this most recent decade is all, and I mean all, of the grant funds have dried up. Our number one funding source was RAPID, which was a state-imposed tax on industry that was transported by rail as a result of the Dunsmore train accident, where very hazardous chemicals rolled into the upper Shasta River and then drained into Shasta Lake. That supplied hazardous materials teams throughout the state of California and funded them for about 10 to 15 years. Well, Rapid had a sunset on it. It closed, and the state legislature chose not to renew the Rapid funding, and so the team has pretty much run out of money. For the team to continue, what we did is we hired a business manager who would basically take all of the equipment on the vehicle and the vehicle's replacement and basically amortize it over the life of the equipment, the breathing apparatus, the monitors, the suits, the response vehicle itself, and to come up with what would be an operating budget just to maintain the team at a status quo as it is today. So the dollars that we came up with in trying to find fairness and equity to distribute it across the cities, the CSDs, and the county, as you can read in the staff report, we came up with a breakdown where the county would pay $10,000, the cities would pay $5,000 each, and the CSDs would pay $2,000 each. The money will be used to maintain and support the equipment and to pay for replacement of the equipment. So when something like a $60,000 PID breaks or goes out and is no longer able to be repaired at a manufacturing facility, we could replace it. So this is raising our fixed fee. We've paid for the past 22 years. The city of Atascadero has paid $22,000 for our membership. I did some research last week. The team has deployed in the city of Atascadero 12 times. The most expensive and longest deployment, by expensive, I'll explain in a moment, the longest deployment was on Jornada Lane in November 4th of 2011. We deployed the team for 7 hours on a chemical incendiary device, and the team had to go in three times downrange to retrieve the item, render it safe, and then package it for evidence. And we actually had the FBI on scene with us because it was being considered a potential act of terrorism. That incident, if we were not members of the JPA, the cost recovery for non-member entities by the JPA, current JPA, would later change to be an MOU, would be $7,000 to $8,000 an hour. So on that one Jornada incident, we would have been right in the neighborhood of $50,000 for a bill that we would have received from the county's hazmat team. And I appreciate Councilmember Kelly asked me earlier about mutual aid. And I think that's a great question because, as we know, we get equipment from other people all the time when we just don't have enough equipment to manage a fire, or if we need more ladder trucks on a fire like the the thrift store. The thing with mutual aid is a trade, if you will, of like equipment. I have wildland fire trucks, so I can loan County Fire a wildland fire truck, because when I have a fire in the city, they have wildland fire trucks, and they'll loan a fire truck back to me for that mutual aid response. There is one hazmat team, and we're all 18 members and owners of that hazmat team. There is only one team, and the next closest team would be Santa Barbara or Monterey County. Councilman Kelly, I tried to do a shotgun approach on answering your question and folding it into the mini presentation here. So with that, staff's recommendation is that the council support other cities and CSDs that have approved this, and the county has already approved this document. We're trying to get all JPA member agencies to jump on board and convert this to an MOU so that we can provide solvent funding to the hazmat team. And with that, I'd be happy to answer further questions.
Thank you, Chief. I'll open it up to questions. Now, Councilman Kelly, did you get your questions answered?
I have a couple more.
Okay.
Okay. I noticed in the report that they were going to hire a secretary, part-time secretary, and I think the total income was going to be $69,000 from the fees. How much is that secretary going to cost? How much is that going to go towards employing somebody?
The secretary, it's kind of interesting. I was the very first secretary. It was actually called the team leader or business manager at the time, and that was back in the late 90s. Following me, a retired firefighter and hazmat team member from San Luis Obispo was the business manager. And then following Bob from San Luis Obispo, Captain Tom Peterson was the business manager of the team. What we did is we decided we needed stronger leadership outside of the business manager role. And so we've burdened currently County Fire with the task of having a battalion chief supervise the hazmat team from a management and a leadership standpoint. The same amount of money we were spending for a business manager went to a professional-type admin assistant, a retired secretary from the Arroyo Grande Fire Department, and she's taken over and become the admin assistant or secretary for the team. What we pay her, I believe, is $10,000 to $12,000 a year. It's an hourly basis, so it's not, I mean, she works fewer hours 1 month, she's paid less 1 month. The reason for the amount of detail that an admin assistant is needed, her responsibility is to maintain about 32 members' certificates, continuing education training hours, fit testing, medical physicals, which have to be completed every year. It's an enormous amount of keep you out of jail with OSHA type of activities is what she does. And so we found that spending about $12,000 a year on someone to maintain and protect us from the liability and the risk of an on-site visit from OSHA, which they have the right to walk on to any hazmat incident and ask and demand to see every individual's hazardous materials training requirements and certificates.
Great, thank you. I just have one other question. On page 12 here, it says under the California Department of Corrections that they had nobody on the team. A couple of years ago when I was on the grand jury, we did take a tour of the men's colony down there in one of the fire facilities outside of the prison. They had quite a, I think, the hazmat team of the county at the time, and they gave quite a demonstration, and I don't see them getting recognized in here. They seem to be, at the time, the presentation that I received, the premier people that would handle anything like this as far as cleanup.
As far as cleanup, I would agree with you. What the hazardous materials team does is stabilize an incident and prevent an emergency from spreading or expanding. Our job is not to go into mitigation and cleanup. We stabilize an incident, and then a contractor comes in and does the cleanup. Incredibly different set of rules, set of training and expertise. Our job is just to protect the public, the motoring tourists, the rail lines, stabilize an incident, and then bring in the professionals for the cleanup. At CMC, those individuals are not a response team. They do not respond to an emergent incident and stabilize it. What they do is take care of and clean up small spills that have occurred that are stabilized at the CMC facility. So they're not team members in that they're on the team equal with Captain Peterson, Captain Jason Smith, or I'm sorry, Engineer Jason Smith and Engineer Andrew Loera, who are our team members. What CMC folks do is they come out and provide the decontamination corridor and setup, and they clean our people when they come out of the what's called the hot zone or the exclusion zone after they've potentially been contaminated. A number of reasons for that. Oftentimes, hazardous materials incidents are a crime or involve a crime, potentially could be terrorism or domestic terrorism. And the last thing we want to do is have potential convicted felons in a crime scene, potentially compounding the crime scene or putting at risk the crime scene for prosecution. We work very close with the FBI. When we're in briefings and we're talking about crime-type scenes, when CMC is on scene, they actually have to leave the building. They cannot be a part of that briefing whenever we're talking about the potential of a crime. So I'd say they're an integral part of the team. They're a supportive part of the team. They're not part of the emergency response. Additionally, the equipment that they have, our JPA has funded their equipment.
Right. Thank you very much. My main concern was the mutual aid, why they, now I understand why they're separated. Thank you.
Thank you. A few more council questions, and recognize if you ask a question, the chief will give you an answer.
Good.
Next, Councilwoman Moreno.
Yeah, Chief, in talking about the financial challenges in the staff report, it was mentioning that the assessments haven't been enough to cover the ongoing costs, and so it says they've been supplemented by many member agencies through their own budgets. Has Atascadero been one of those agencies that has been supplementing over the years?
Not hard costs directly to the team, but the way we do supplement the budget of the countywide hazmat team is through we continue to pay for our members to be trained for their certifications, their medical monitoring, and certainly their overtime and response to incidents.
And that will keep going on.
That
it's
would
not
continue.
Changing with this.
Yes.
So if I'm looking at this in a very simplified way, Atascadero pays $5,000 to get training and the supplies needed if a hazmat spill occurs, and it's sort of insurance in case something happens in our area because then we have the help coming our way.
And what's so unique about it is the help that's coming is a $1.5 to close to $2 million vehicle and about 30 personnel. We only have three on the team.
Right.
To do one entry takes about 12 people. And if you are on a hot summer day in North Atascadero and you jump into a ceramic bag and you make a response, when you come out, you're done, you're spent. Usually it's 12 hours recovery before that person can go back into a hazmat suit. So it takes a significant depth of people to support a hazmat incident. Sure. So on the incident in Atascadero, we'd have three of our people on the team. We'd have 27 members from other fire agencies from as far away as Arroyo Grande assisting us.
Yeah. I think it actually sounds quite reasonable, and I'm surprised they didn't try to get some costs recouped earlier, but I guess the grant issue has been more recent, so thank you.
The grants were beneficial, and then frankly, to be honest with you, to get to the point we're at right now, we've been working on this for 2.5 years think about how many moving political parts there are. We have 18 to 19 member agencies with governing bodies that we have to bring this to.
Poor things.
Concludes your questions. Councilwoman Fonzie.
Thank you. A couple of questions for you, Chief. First off, I can certainly see the need to have this in place for the benefit of the city. If we have an emergency, we need to have that available. I am a bit concerned about the cost increasing so much that it was $1,000 per year, and now it's going to $5,000. And I see that's actually a fairly reasonable amount, but what gives me pause is the built-in inflator. And this cost of living increase that would go up automatically each year, the city council would not have a real handle on this. It wouldn't come back to us again so that we would see it again and again. It would just be one time and then off it goes. Could you speak to that, please?
Sure. The model you're describing is what we currently have in place, and it's probably why we've gone 22 years collecting $1,000 per member entity. And it is so cumbersome to try to go back to 19 elected bodies to raise the CPI 0.8% for a given year. What is unique in the protections that you do have is local government county fire chiefs comprise the board of directors for the hazmat team, and we have to vote to impose a tax upon our own budgets and raise the fee by whatever the CPI is, and it doesn't have to go up. If we're meeting expenses and we have monitors that continue, we don't have to inflate it. We would inflate it only to the maximum of the CPI based on needs of the hazmat team.
Okay, and a question that may be a little bit off the wall, but it came to mind for me that if you have some kind of a problem, for instance, we're talking a lot about rail cars and oil shipments. Why are we not going to industries such as Phillips 66, for example, and asking them to be giving some money too?
I think it's a great question, and I can tell you right now that every single year the hazmat team trains at the Phillips 66 refinery, as we do train at Diablo Canyon and another number of high hazard, high potential, high risk industries and occupancies. What's interesting is Phillips 66 has never had an incident that required our county's hazmat team to respond to it. Though they are good partners and they do provide significant amount of information, data, professional expertise in the petroleum, they're very narrowly focused in the petroleum industry. Maybe the city attorney could help me better here, or even the city manager, there has to be a nexus as to what you charge or impose as a tax or a fee on an entity that's proportional. And it's hard to make the argument that we should tax Phillips 66 when for the entire time that they've been at the plant, the hazmat team's never responded to that incident. Likewise, in the entire time the hazmat team's been in existence, we've responded to one railway incident, and that happened in Santa Margarita, and it was basically where they pushed a train car into another train car, and it hit the engine, and it spilled its coolant on the side of the rail bed. That's the only rail incident we've had in this entire county since the hazmat team's inception. The struggle with the rail is they are so autonomous from local government, and by local government, I'm saying city, county, and state government. There's even federal laws that state that if we tell the railroad company to do XYZ and they say no, and we take any action to impose upon them. All they have to do is go to the feds and get a stay or a cease and desist order against us, and even the state of California has no power over the rail, probably a bit more influence. And so what we have felt in the Municipal Fire Service is the best way to argue our point is to argue collectively with groups like California Fire Chiefs and the California League of Cities. And I think we've seen the biggest response from Union Pacific, our local rail line owners, by working through California Fire Chiefs, the governor's office, and the League of California Cities. So to try to give a little bit of a shotgun approach, I know what you're asking is a tall order to try to impose a tax. We did go to our public health officer, the ones that's responsible for environmental health, and we were going to look at putting a fee on all of those hazmat handlers, distributors, and there's a specific law written into state code that says you can't do that. And so that actually, we spent about 6 months investigating that, and that was one of our options that was on our options list that we removed from, that you can see in the staff report, because while we thought it was a great option and it could have solved this $60,000 problem, it wasn't an option once we had legal counsel review it.
Good information. I didn't know that. One last question, and this may be for our police chief as well, that I'm wondering how you integrate the hazmat team with the police department, since so many of these things are so very hazardous, it involves evacuation, which would really be police.
Yeah. We work closely with the police department. They receive minimal training as hazardous materials awareness. It's an 8-hour class, basically how not to drive into or get into an issue from a hazardous materials incident. The nice thing is we have a great working relationship and a professional emergency relationship with the police department. And when we have a command post set up, they're with us. They're hearing the exact same thing. And to even take it one step farther, we've developed a great relationship with the county's the county bomb squad. And we now train twice a year with the county bomb squad and work hand in hand, because we could have an explosive incident that then becomes a hazmat incident, or we could have a hazmat incident that turns into an explosive incident. And we actually work with the Sheriff's Bomb Task Force and actually put them in suits, and we go down range and test ourselves and how we would apply solutions to solve or mitigate, and who takes the lead based on whether the explosive property is the biggest issue or the chemical property is the biggest issue. So we've really tried to include our law enforcement partners, and I think I'm very comfortable in saying that that's done countywide with all the local law enforcement.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilman Moreno.
Just a quick add on to what Councilmember Fonzie was talking about. If something did happen, say with Phillips 66, wouldn't they be financially responsible to reimburse the expenses incurred by the hazmat team?
In a perfect world, yes. You come from the accounting world. So let me tell you, the first thing we hear, and I'll give you a great example. There was a hazardous material spill in Paso Robles at a commercial facility, and it went to negotiated arbitration and a percentage of settlement, and we had real hard costs of $18,000. We received 43 cents on the dollar reimbursement, negotiated and settled by their risk managers and their insurance company and the entity that was collecting for the hazmat team. And it was either settle for that or go to court and spend three times that trying to get. We just don't get 100%.
Okay.
And in my history, that incident happened about 18 years ago, and I have never seen us collect 100%.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other council questions? I'll open it up to the public. Any member of the public wishing to offer input? Welcome.
Good evening, Council. My name is Bill White. I'm a fire captain with the City of Atascadero, and I just wanted to reiterate, I happen to be the Hazardous Materials Incident Command on the Jornada incident that you talked about. And as a first responder, I'm not only responsible for my crew being the first on-scene captain, but I have to be the person who makes the notifications, sets up the safety, the isolation, the notifications on these things. They become very overwhelming very quickly for a 2 or 3-person engine company, and on that particular incident, it brought 2 engine companies to bear on the incident, which left the city uncovered. Hazardous materials incidents are very, very big. They can be very big, and they can become very overwhelming. on that incident. I remained the incident commander, and we had the 40-member crew hazmat team that showed up, and we were there for 7 hours. That committed both of our engines for 7 hours, so we had to use the mutual aid system to bring in engines to cover. I also happened to be the incident commander on an incident in the Vaughn Shopping Center, where we worked very closely with law enforcement because we had to do evacuations of Vaughns, of Get Fit. So it's very low-cost insurance, and it's a nice warm blanket for the on-duty crews, knowing that we have a very technical resource available to us just around the corner. In fact, it's in Paso Robles. The trailer's in Paso Robles, and so it's here very quickly and really is a good thing for the community.
Thank you. Any other member of the public? Seeing no one come forward.
I'll make a motion.
Well, let me close public comment. And let me just comment first that it's good to pull something off the consent calendar now and then, just to realize that there is a lot of information behind each of these items, and it's usually fairly well thought out, and it's usually one of those situations like, what choice do you have? It's probably a pretty reasonable recommendation. That's why staff put these on consent calendar. But I think it's good to pull now and then and learn from this. One question I would have is Councilman Fonzie brought up. It's not something we would see very often. And much like you bring back to us the weed abatement, fairly boring and routine, but we kind of like to hear about it each year. This is something that's actually very important and I think kind of interesting to the community. And though I don't think we need to go into this level of depth, is there, would you see any issue with having it come back to council? You're negotiating this amount. And just a little bit of an update. I would see probably about a fourth of what you presented tonight, but it'd be a good review for us to know about this program. Would you see any problem with that?
I'd certainly be happy to do what you like. I've given you all the good stuff, though.
Yeah.
Seriously, though, I could bring back a small PowerPoint with slides that show you the equipment, the team working on in training and on real incidents.
I'm just thinking, like, annually, if this is something where there's an escalator and you're taking action at this level, we just had a brief report.
Okay.
It might be something to consider. I'll see if there's any consensus, because everyone may say, hey, we got a great education. We don't need any more. I'll just see if there's anything incorporated. I did want to just see if there any last comments by Councilman Fonzie, who did pull this item. Any suggestions?
I understand your position. I needed clarification because I feel that it's important to protect the public's money, and so I wanted to hear it from you, and I appreciate this information.
Thank you. Back to Councilman Kelly. You've got a motion on the floor.
Yeah, just that we approve consent item A2.
Second.
Of a motion by Councilman Kelly, seconded by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. We move on. Next agenda item is updates from the city manager. And I'm sure you're covering a lot of items, but I did want to make sure you could make reference to the VIP lunch that the police did today and maybe about the 5K run that had gone on this weekend, as well as and certainly end on the Kiwanis work day at the zoo, because I'd like to comment on that at least. But if you haven't got it included already, please touch on those or have the chief do that.
I did miss the VIP lunch, and as you said, we have a lot going on, and so I didn't forget about that one. It was a wonderful event. Today at the pavilion, we had what we call the... I was there. I know. How could I forget it? had a great event recognizing all of the volunteers at the police department. Volunteers account for over 8,000 volunteer hours at the police department every year. They do everything from volunteer patrol, house checks, clerical stuff, front counter duty. They keep track of maintaining all of the cars. We recognized one of our volunteers who has volunteered for the police department for 25 years. Her husband had also been a volunteer and recently passed. So the amount of hours that those two alone have put in, we have several volunteers that have put in over 1,000 hours per year. again, a tremendous commitment from them, and it makes it, we can't do the work that we do, and the police can't do the work what they do without this group. Do you want to add anything, Chief?
The only thing I would add to that is, I mean, we have a total of 28 volunteers now, but we're always accepting other applications. If you're out there and you're looking for a way to help, we'd love your help. Many of our volunteers volunteer at multiple different locations. Every once in a while, I'll be going around town, and I'll see one of our volunteers putting in time somewhere else, and I get a little tinge of jealousy when I see that. But I'm also very proud of the work that they do throughout the community.
Thank you. We have a lot of other good news items. First and foremost, the Charles Paddock Zoo received our accreditation. So we went through, yay! So fewer than 10% of the approximately 2,800 animal exhibitors licensed by the U.S. Department of Fish and Wild or Agriculture are accredited. So there's 228 accredited zoos in North America. There's 2,800 zoos, so we're part of the elite top 10%. AZA accredited zoos are consistently evolving, and standards are continuously being raised. Each zoo must keep up with those changes to remain AZA accredited, and to prove it, they must go through the entire accreditation process every 5 years. So this was a new process to me as city manager, and as the zoo is a direct report to me, and I learned a lot about the accreditation process. The process that they go through, going through each of our policy and procedures, going through animal records for each of our animals, looking at each exhibit for safety and adequacy, looking at the zoo as an overall picture, talking with staff. It is an incredible process, and I'm very proud of the hard work that not only the zoo staff, but all of the city staff, public works, finance, everybody had a hand in. And not just all of the staff, but again, those volunteers that are so important here in Atascadero do an incredible job. Charles volunteers both at the zoo and the police station. And no, you're not allowed to be jealous. We're jealous when he's at the police station, police department. So that incredible volunteer spirit and that incredible community support, which is what makes this possible. We have our Sales Tax Oversight Committee is still being formed. So on March 26th, we held a group, we held a meeting of the community groups to come up with some rules on how we are going to appoint members to this Sales Tax Oversight Committee. As you know, there are two at-large members that the council will be appointing. We did receive applications, and council is scheduled to interview those sometime next week. But there's seven community group appointments. So there's seven appointments that will be done by community groups. We came up with some rules, and we sent out a notice to all community groups asking them to submit a notice of interest if they're interested in appointing somebody. We are very, I want to get that word out. So if you guys could pass the word on any community group that you're a part of saying, hey, you know, we'd like you to appoint a member to that group. And then what we decide is that we will be doing a random drawing if there are more than seven community groups interested and be doing that. So there's some other rules, but there's information on our website. You can talk to myself or Marcia, and we'll get you the information. We want to get people on this. Atascadero Sign Cleanup Campaign update. So the Chamber is hosting a sign symposium on Thursday, April 30th from 8:30 to 9:30 here at City Hall. There will be a sign ordinance question and answer along with presentation on best sign practices for your businesses. We are that's going to be a collaboration between city staff, the Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber of Commerce is leading the way. Thank you very much, Linda. And we'll also have sign professionals there. We want to have good-looking professional signage in businesses here in Atascadero, and I think you can see that this is already starting to make a difference. I've heard a lot of really positive comments on things that are going on here in town. We want to keep up that. We want to make it work for the business. We want to have something that's successful for them and good for the community. We're having a conservation celebration or a party for the planet on Saturday, April 18th at the zoo. This is a fun, hands-on day for children of all ages. There'll be interactive adventures and lively demonstrations to provoke the imagination and ignite creativity. This is a day full of fun and purpose, enjoyable for all at no cost. Basically, there'll be a lot of kids' activities. There'll be informational booths on conservation. There'll be information from the zoo staff on various hot spots and conservation as a whole. It's a fantastic, fun event, and you learn a lot, too. So please, join us at the zoo on Saturday. Speaking of the zoo, last Saturday, we also had a very exciting event at the zoo. It was the Kiwanis Work Day. So this was not just the Atascadero Kiwanis Club, but countywide. We had Kiwanis, we had Action Club, and we had Key Club all coming together to do a volunteer project at the zoo. They tore down some of our old rotting fences that were not compliant and are not our new railing standard, and replaced that completely around the spider monkey exhibit. So it was a lot of work, a lot of hard work. We didn't tell them that there was cement underneath the underneath some of the dirt, so digging those post holes weren't quite as easy as they had all hoped. But they did an incredible job. We had some city staff members there, just a couple, just to help out and show them where things were, and they attacked it. Those that weren't working on that railing were pulling weeds and helping with landscaping. So it was a great event, and thank you for Kiwanis for all your hard work. Did you want to add something to that, Mayor O'Malley?
Other than I would like to do a special thank you letter signed by all council members, because it was quite a lot of work, and it was a countywide effort, and I've spoken with a couple of the Kiwanis presidents around the county. I'd like to see this be an annual event. It used to be Kiwanis took on the Sam McGill Mission and had an annual work day all day with many workers coming out. And I think this would be a great project for Kiwanis, because, as you know, the zoo is not just a city zoo. It is a regional asset, and I think this would be a great opportunity to get this kind of help each year.
I think that would be fantastic.
If you could write up a letter for our signature, I think that would be great.
This was an incredible help and an incredible amount of man hours that went into this. So thank you, Kiwanis. We had the Firehouse 5K run. So the 2015 Firehouse 5K was a huge success. It hosted the largest group of runners to date, with 146 participating in the toughest 5K in the county. We partnered with 19 businesses, which served as either donors or participants in the event. And the top sponsor for the event was Grocery Outlet, which provided all of the food, including the yummy tri-tip sandwich feast. Over $2,000 was raised, and I believe over 140 participants ran in the event. And the money raised will be donated back to the community via scholarships, sponsorships, and community partnerships. Another great event. I know Saturday was extremely busy, as we were all running from event to event, and they were fantastic. The Peace Officers Memorial is coming up, another fantastic event. This year, the event will again be held at the Faces of Freedom Veterans Memorial in Atascadero, and it will be held on May 14th at 10 a.m. So that's a very moving event. And we have the Junior High Color Fun Run coming up on Saturday, April 18th. So that's this Saturday. The parent-teacher organization is hosting the first annual Splash of Color Fun Run 5K this Saturday, April 18th. This is a family fun event that all can enjoy in our community. And I know that many council members pitched in for this, and maybe you can talk a little bit more about that, Tom. And I know you know about the event, or if you know somebody else.
Yes, I would, and again, I would like to thank Councilman Sturdivant, Councilwoman Fonzie, Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, and myself, along with a number of the school board members, bought the color orange. And what you get to do is, it's like a fundraiser. It's the first time I believe this has been done in our county, but the schools have a run, similar, not quite as rigorous as what the firemen do. It is junior high. But they run around our community, and they have stations where we get to splash color on them. Now, the city manager made sure we're not going around Sunken Gardens and a few other spots. But for those of us that purchased the color orange, which is council members and school board members, we are welcome to join our station, which will be if I find the right, and we happen to be in so many things, I have to find the right set of notes. This will be at Vic and Heidi Cooper's house, 5301 Cabrillo Road. I believe that's kind of that way. And then that'll be going on from about 9:30 to 11. So if you're able to be there at any time, kids will be, you know, the fast ones, of course, will come in first. And so the Heather Morenos will be coming in first, the Tom O'Malley and Bob Kelly. We might be maybe more in the middle, but we will have orange to splash on those kids, and they'd love to have us there. So thank you for mentioning that.
So thank you, Mayor and City Council. And that concludes my report, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from Council? Well, then we can move on to our community forum, which is an opportunity for any member of the public to speak on any item not on the agenda that's under our jurisdiction. So please welcome, come forward. I see a representative from the Ministerial Association often shares.
My name is Ted Mort, resident of Atascadero and pastor of Atascadero Gospel Chapel. And I'm here representing all the evangelical ministers in Atascadero and really all the Christians in Atascadero. Kind of a twofold thing why we usually try to show up here at these meetings. One is just to express our appreciation to Mayor and all you city council members, as well as all the staff, just for what you guys do, all the time you put in, the care you have for our city. And so thank you. And then another purpose for coming here is to pray, because I don't know how big a deal it is to know a bunch of Christians in this community are thankful for you and support you. Hopefully you like that idea. But more than just what we can do, our backup, we believe in a big God, a God that cares about us, cares about our community, and we want to lift you guys up in prayer for all you do. So I'm going to pray right now. Lord God, we thank you for our community. Lord, all these things going on, all the people that make Atascadero what it is, I just thank you that you are a God who loves us, a God who gives us so many gifts. Lord, many people in our community don't believe in you, don't even acknowledge you. We're just such a variety of backgrounds, such a variety of beliefs and sizes and shapes and colors, and yet, Lord, you made all of us. You care about all of us, and you've blessed all of us so much with life, with health in most cases, and just with a great place to live here in Atascadero. So thank you for all your blessings. I pray for our community that we would continue to be strong, that you would just cause us to be a place where we care about each other, where we uphold the value of every person, every child, every adult. And Lord, I pray for our city staff, Lord, the police officers, the firemen. I pray for the city council, Lord, that you would bless them, that you would give them wisdom as they do their jobs. I pray for the council members tonight, that they would be able to think clearly, that they would be able to make good decisions. And just as we go on as a city here, that you would just put your blessings on our city. May the leaders make good decisions. May we as people honor you. May we live in such a way that would make everybody proud to be part of Atascadero. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Thank you. Welcome, next speaker. Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment and community forum and bring it back to the council. Our next agenda item is to begin public hearings, and our first one is on the B1 Community Facilities District 2005-1 Annexation Number 13 Atascadero Triangle with People's Self-Help Housing. We'll start with the staff report.
Thank you, Mayor. Good evening, council members. Before you this evening is PLN 2007-1243, the Community Facilities Annexation Number 13 for the Atascadero Triangle Project. The applicant is People's Self-Help Housing. So the Community Facility District Number 2005-1 was established in May of 2005 by the City Council. So the state does allow the formation of districts to provide a financial mechanism to levy taxes on new properties that will receive services. So the Atascadero Triangle annexation was conditioned to be fiscally neutral through the annexation of the CFD, or Communities Facilities District. So what is the Community Facilities District? Well, what that is really offsetting the cost of police, parks, and fire on all new development that's legislatively approved by the City Council. So again, this was a requirement of the project when it was first approved back in 2008. In February 24, 2015, the City Council approved an intent to annex resolution through its consent calendar. And what this did was establish an annexation boundary. It established a date for the public hearing for the annexation, which is tonight. And this is a new method to annex properties in CFD due to recent litigation. So before then, we used to just go ahead and hold a public hearing annexation and do it all in one fell swoop, thanks to recent court cases and litigation, specifically the City of San Diego versus Shapiro. We now have to modify the way we do the CFD annexations. So this is actually the new methodology, which you will be seeing moving forward for future annexations within the city into the CFD. So this is the Atascadero Triangle project. The City Council did review this item and approved it early in January of this past year. So that just a little refresher that the Atascadero Triangle is an 11-unit affordable housing project by People Self-Help Housing. So they've been working with the applicant for about a year now, and People Self-Help Housing has also done a numerous amount of projects here in the city. So we're really excited to continue our working relationship and building our affordable housing base. So this is sort of the last steps that we have before People Self-Help Housing can finalize their map and really begin moving forward and constructing those units. So we did meet with the applicant earlier this afternoon to really kick off the beginning of this project with the off-site improvements, which is the improvements along Atascadero Avenue, San Andreas, and Navajoa. So that's sort of step one. And still step two is really creating those lots so they can go out and sell these lots to folks within our community for those who need a little bit more help into obtaining their first home. So this, like I said, this is the final step necessary. This does fund new police, fire, and park services that is provided to these new residents within the project area. The tax that is levied against the residential parcels for the fiscal year 2012 and 2013 was approximately $650.08, or $54.17 per month. The money collected can only be used to fund new public services and not used to support existing services. So what this means is as new residents are added to the city, these funds are now pooled to help provide for new and upgraded level of services for these facilities and or services within the city. After the close of, so the way this is going to work is the City Council will open the public hearing for public comment. And after the close, the city may adopt draft ordinance or draft resolution A. And so what this does is authorize the annexation of the territory into the CFD 2005-1. If approved, the resolution then authorizes an election by the property owners. And then the city council, the city clerk will certify the election results. If the landowners approve that, the council is then directed to adopt draft ordinance A. So just really quick, because this is an affordable housing development, property owners do qualify for waivers of the CFD. So the process is done after the close of sale due to USDA restrictions on the deeds and loans themselves. Again, this is done on a voluntary basis, and this is very similar to what was done and completed at the El Camino Oaks subdivision. So again, over time, these affordable housing homeowners will eventually resell the homes to possibly non-income qualified buyers. And from there, we want to be able to recapture that money per what's being done tonight. So again, future homeowners within the Atascadero Triangle do have that opportunity through a voluntary basis to sign a CFD waiver since they're income qualified. But again, they have to do that at the close of sale. And one more time, the final map may be approved when this is complete. So that's sort of the last piece of the puzzle that the applicant is seeking, is a final map approval. So once this is done, we will bring that final map to the council, hopefully in May, to really then begin the construction process of the project. So this is the boundary map. Again, the Atascadero Triangle project is bounded by San Andreas, Navajoa, and Atascadero Avenue. So with that, these are sort of the steps that we're going to run the annexation. The mayor is to open the public comment period, and the mayor closes the public comment period. And again, motion to adopt draft resolution A, authorizing the annexation of the territory identified in City Council Resolution 2015-012, and then direct the City Council to conduct the landowner vote. So I don't necessarily think we have to recess. I'm talking to Marcia about this, so it should be a fairly quick count. And that's the landowner vote right there. And then Marcia will be able to announce the votes as our city clerk. And then we'll motion on to do the rest of the items. So with that, I'm actually turn it over to you, Mayor O'Malley.
Well, thank you. A nice, concise report once again. I'm going to begin with ex parte communications. That's where council members disclose to the public, before we go to public comment, any contact we've had with principals in this project, if we've been influenced by anything that might impact our decision we might make, by anything we've heard outside of the public process. It is required by law in some cases, and this happens to be one. So I'll just go from my right to my left. If there's any communication of anything you've learned outside of this process that influences your decision.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
No ex parte.
None.
As a member of the DRC, this was brought up for discussion a couple of times, but nothing that's not in the report.
Thank you. And everything you heard was part of the public process of the DRC. Thank you. Well, now, and I do want to acknowledge we have a representative from People's Self-Help Housing here, and we would often ask if you would like to make comments to beginning our public comment. You're welcome to, and any member of the public. So I will open it up to public comment. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Dale Augustin. I have you think being an attorney for almost 40 years, I'd understand all this, but I don't. I don't understand why, with it being within the city limits, it wasn't automatically included in the service district, and maybe somebody can explain that to me.
That's an easy one, but I'll turn that over to our city manager and direct that how it should be answered. I'm going to hand that off to anyone.
How about if I try and give it a stab?
Go for it.
So the council adopted the community facilities district that overlies the entire city. So the district boundaries itself are in the entire city. However, individual parcels have to be annexed into that as they come before the council. The idea of the CFD is it became apparent that residential development did not pay for that. So for every house that we add, that was eroding the service levels for every single house that was already in the city. And so what happened is the cities were going more and more trying not to build housing, but instead to only build commercial and deny the housing. CFDs became a method to basically allow that housing to occur while still maintaining the service level for your existing employees. So for example, if we had one police officer per 1,000 capita, we wanted to maintain that level. What we did is we did a lot of fiscal studies to look at for a median income home, how much money do they bring in taxes to the city, how much money do they spend on different things, versus how much does it cost to provide services to that resident at the same level as everybody else. And there was a deficit. Currently that deficit's around $650 a year, hence the CFD. What the council did is they adopted a policy that says we don't want to erode the services for our current citizens, so every item that comes before us that requires our approval, we're going to require that they annex into the CFD. And so that's what's occurring here. This is what's been occurring for all of the projects since, I think it's around 2005. Does that cover it, Alfredo?
Very well put. Yes, it does.
Thank you. Thank you. So the idea is to break even, that anytime we do a project, it doesn't shift costs of new residents onto current residents. And so it's just a full cost recovery so we can maintain the existing service level with each increment of person moving to our community. Any other questions from the public or comments?
Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment, bring it back to council. I do have, and I didn't ask for questions from council before because we didn't have any lights on. I do now. And we have, did you have a, go ahead.
Just a clarification. I think this started off at around $465 a year. And it's my understanding that it's like the property tax, it goes up 2% every year. Is that correct?
It does go up every year, I believe. Jerry, if you want to chime in on the percentage on that.
Yes, the CFD does allow it to go up either the maximum of CPI or 5% a year. So for the last couple of years, it has been flat.
Thank you.
Any other council questions?
I'm happy to make a motion.
I'd be happy to receive a motion.
I make a motion to adopt draft resolution A, authorizing the annexation of territory identified in the City Council Resolution 2015-012.
Second.
We have a motion by Mayor Pro Tem Sturdivant. Mayor Pro Tem, that was last year.
You're so 2014, Tom.
Hurry up, Tom.
Yeah, get up to speed, I know. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, seconded by Councilman Sturdivant. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
And as said, we do not need to take a recess because there's only two votes to count, I understand. Have you tallied those two?
I have. It took me like an hour. No. It's actually one person who owns both parcels, so it's one ballot with both saying that they're voting for the two, and they said yes.
Well, with that, if there's any other discussion or comment, we also could entertain a motion. I don't believe I need to reopen for public comment on that, do I?
No.
Okay, thank you. Council direction?
I guess number six, I make a motion that we accept the council motion to adopt draft ordinance A, authorizing levy of special taxes in CFD 2005-1 for annexation territory.
Before we do that, we do need to declare the result first, so we need to adopt draft resolution B.
So on declaring item,
the result of the special election.
Item four and then four item and five.
Where am I? Oh, there we go. So adopt draft. So make a motion to adopt draft resolution B, declaring the results of a special annexation landowner election, determining the validity of prior proceedings, and directing the recording of an amendment to the notice of special tax lien. That one?
And that's the one.
Do the ordinance also at the same time if you want, or do it a separate vote.
So I hear that as a motion for draft resolution B and draft ordinance A. We just need a second.
I will second it.
So I have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant.
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley.
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Before we move on, I did want to comment briefly, as brief as I can be, about people's self-help housing, because I know Councilwoman Moreno and I have had the honor of joining you for some housewarmings, truly. I know every council member here has participated and supported this project, but it's a great organization, and when you get to meet these young families that truly put in sweat equity and really build their own homes and end up living there, it's just quite an experience. So it's a really wonderful community service you provide, and we are welcome you in our community and hope you keep finding more projects. So thank you. And thank you, Alfredo. I know you've worked with them on many projects, so. And I haven't heard too many complaints, so good job. Any other comments on this item before we move on? Well, with that, then, we will move on to, I guess we only have one public hearing, and we're moving on to the management report, C1, San Luis Obispo County Tourism Marketing District, or TMD, board appointment. And first, we'll have a staff report.
Thank you, Mayor. I don't have a PowerPoint tonight because it's a very brief presentation. The item you have before you tonight is for the council to appoint a board member to the Countywide Tourism Marketing District, or TMD. In January of 2015, this year, the council voted to approve the joining the county TMD. This is a 1% assessment on all lodging establishments that will go to the countywide TMD to promote the county as a destination tourist spot and to promote lodging stays here in the county. What we want to do is we want to bring people here to the state, to the county, and then here to eventually to Atascadero. As part of formation, the formation of that district continues to move forward through the process. They are now at the point where they need to appoint board members. There's a total of 15 board members. So each jurisdiction here in the county, including the city of Atascadero, will be allowed or asked to appoint one board member. They're going to get a board member that represents a bed and breakfast, a RV park, and a vacation rental, and one representative who is appointed by the County of San Luis, and then three at-large members. The board member that I'm asking you to appoint tonight is the one from the city of Atascadero, our jurisdiction board member. The board member has to be a lodging owner. So in March 16th of this year, the city clerk sent out notices to all of our lodging owners here in town, asking them to apply if they were interested in becoming one of the TMD board members. We did receive one application from J.P. Patel, and that is here for your approval and to appoint him to the TMD board. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from council. And I will add that this process is still being extended at the county level. There has been some disagreement amongst the lodging owners, and that's still being discussed at the county level, and the board will have to decide that later. There was more urgency for us making this appointment when it was agendized. However, since it's been delayed at the county, it is a little less so. I think it does give us an opportunity at this time to note that other cities have had other methods to find their appointment to this organization. Some cities delegate it to their local T-bids. Others might, I think one city delegates it to their Chamber of Commerce. I think a number of cities maintain that responsibility at the council level, and I think that's a good thing to do. And one of the reasons is, since our city will have less representation just because we're a smaller TOT player in the county, I think it's important that the person that represents our city is thinking about the whole city. One thing that the TMD does in their promotions of lodging is not only thinking about, of course, it's about increasing transient occupancy tax, more heads in beds, as they would say, but no one comes just to stay in a hotel. They come to do things or see things or visit people, and I think that's where they get involved at the county level on activities like promoting restaurants and activities. So it's important for this representative to remember there's a lot of other businesses in town besides the lodging, and I think I would hope we would kind of direct whoever is appointed to keep that in mind. I will also say that in the past I've not voted on items related to the tourism marketing district at the county level because I am an owner of a bed and breakfast and event center, and we took great deliberation with the Fair Political Practices Commission that has jurisdiction over us elected officials in terms of what things we can participate in and not, and I did not want to participate until we had that very clear. And I have a stack of letters from FPPC, thanks to our city attorney, that's actually helps clarify this issue for many of us. Is, for example, the mayor of Morro Bay owns vacation rentals, and many folks are involved. This is kind of an exception to the normal common sense view that
usually if we have owned property or anything, it's considered a conflict of interest and you would not participate. This is almost like the opposite, because by definition, if you don't have a conflict of interest, you can't participate. Only folks that can be on the board have to be transient occupancy taxpayers, for example. And the Fair Political Practices Commission usually fines too, and things are more applied countywide rather than specifically. They have some leeway. So I could not only apply, I could even vote for myself if I chose to, according to the FPPC. I'm not doing that, but I just wanted to clarify why I have not participated in the past. So with that, we have one applicant before us, and I open up to council comments or questions. And I'll open it up to the public if there's any question about this or comments. Well, then I'll bring it back to the council for a decision or a motion.
I'll make a motion that the council appoint J.P. Patel as lodging representative to the Board of Directors for the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Marketing District.
I'll second.
A motion by Councilman Fonzi, seconded by Councilman Kelly. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzi?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Councilmember Sturtevant?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. Management report number 2, amendments to municipal code relating to the Planning and Parks and Recreation Commissions. I believe our city clerk has this presentation.
Yes, I do. Thank you. The microphone in the right spot. This is an item that actually the council asked us to bring back to you, the Parks and Rec Commission, back in your strategic planning a couple of years ago. We talked about putting them on hold and having them not meet until further notice because they were having a lot of canceled meetings. There wasn't much going to them. And I'm just going to go through a few slides here just as to review. Again, in 2013, the council actually amended the appointment process. I'm going to start with the Planning Commission because that actually is in the first part of the municipal code. In looking at the Parks and Rec Commission, I think it was Rochelle, and looking at it with me, Rochelle noticed that there was one thing that back in 2013, when the council did amend the municipal code regarding Planning Commission, creating the 2-year terms for all the commissioners, we didn't eliminate one little section there. So it's actually on page 81, if you're looking at your agenda packet, the first page of that ordinance, and it's just taking out the part about their terms changing at the municipal election. That was every 4 years. Now it's every 2 years on the even numbered years. So I fixed that here while I was looking at the Parks and Rec Commission. Then if we go on, Parks and Rec meetings, like we had said, they met once a month for many, many years. And then the last few years, there's been not as much information for them to review for you, and so they've had to cancel a lot of meetings. So it was in January, a couple of years ago now, that the council did suspend their meetings because of that. And there's been a few times where you did ask them to meet, like with the Joy Playground and a few other things, you have asked them to get together and review that and give you some advice on that. So as a result, the council asked staff to come back with an ordinance to amend the code. And a couple of things, you wanted to say that they will meet as needed so that they still are a commission, but they don't have to meet unless there's an item that they need to meet about. And also to make the appointment process similar to the Planning Commission. So I would put that 2-year terms and everything in there, which we didn't have. And then just to update the code in general. So if you, again, page 82 of the staff report and on, you'll see several things that, going through it, I found several things that needed to be updated. And so including, it talks about the community services director. So we changed that to be city manager or his or her designee, things like that. So I just updated a variety of things in there. So it was back in 2003, 12 years ago, that we actually made the 5 directly appointed commissioners. So that's how long you've had the direct appointment. That seems like it went by really fast to me. It didn't seem like it was that long ago. And then just 2 years ago, made them the 2-year term. So if you look through this ordinance, I've basically changed everything that would make the Parks and Rec Commission the same as the Planning Commission as far as term length and things like that. But their meeting time will be as needed. And I also added this for some reason in the Parks and Rec Commission section. We never had where they meet and what things like that. So I just tried to
clarify that. So those are the changes I made. And if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. My recommendation is to adopt the ordinance first reading by title only on these amendments that are listed in the report.
So I see no lights, no council questions. Open up to the public for any input. Seeing no one approach, we'll close public comment. Bring it back to council for action.
I make a motion we accept staff's recommendation.
We have a motion by Councilman Sturdivant, seconded by Councilwoman Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Sturdivant?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Kelly?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Moreno?
Yes.
Mayor O'Malley?
Yes.
5-0, motion passes.
Thank you. And again, normally I like to separate out committee reports from individual determinations. We'll just merge them again tonight because I think it should be fairly brief. So, Bob, you want to go first on anything you want to share?
Sure, I just have a couple announcements. A couple weeks ago, I was contacted by a student teacher down at Cal Poly who is doing classes down at the Del Rio Continuation School in civics, and he had a small class of about 8 students who were very concerned about our scavenging law ordinance that we just put in place and how it all happened. So I went down there and spent about 45 minutes in the class, went all through it with them, and it was a very interesting experience. They're a really good group of kids, and they're really interested in how the city and the government operates. So I told them how they could get on the webpage and look at our agendas, and at some point in time, if we have a pretty good council meeting, I've invited them to come to the council meeting as my guests, maybe sit in the front row or behind us or what have you, and just to see how government operates. But I was really impressed by them, and I hope we can get a little more involvement with them. The other announcement I have is this Saturday on the 18th, I've been asked to be a judge for the chili cook-off at the VFW. I believe it'll start about 11 or 12 o'clock. I think they have 18 people that are going to come and cook their chili. So anybody out there that's looking for something to do on Saturday, come by the VFW, which is up by our zoo. And I guess at the same day, they can go by the zoo, go by the lake. So once again, in Atascadero, like every other weekend, there's a lot of little things going on. And I have no committee reports.
We'll bring you a bottle of Rolaids for afterwards.
That and probably a clean T-shirt.
Thank you.
It must.
Councilman Mayor Pro Tem Moreno.
Okay, some committee reports. As the liaison with the Atascadero TBID, at the last meeting we had held an election, I guess you would call it, for 2 new TBID members. You'll remember that last year we as council had approved Linda Hendy and Diane. Her last name is escaping me at the moment. Helbert from Brew, as members of the TBID, is the ones that they had kind of dwindled off, and they were, you know, to be temporary appointments to fill out a term. And so this time we had 2 people apply and were elected by the board, and that will come to us in June. And those 2 members are Michael, I think it's Wombat, his last name. He's the he's with the new Marriott Hotel up at the north end of town, and assuming that they are open at the time of our vote, he'll be able to be a TBID member. Otherwise, we would have to just change something with that. We don't need to talk about that now. And then the other is our very own Tom O'Malley. So that would be our first B&B on that. So that'll come before us in June. We have our first, we have here in Atascadero, we have a biannual budget process. So every 2 years we do a budget. And myself and Councilmember Kelly are on the Finance Committee this year, and we have our first meeting tomorrow. It's from 3 to 5 p.m. It's in room 106, and it is open to the public. So I encourage the public to come, listen in. We'll have public comment in the beginning if you want to ask questions, but listen in and find out about the finances of the city. Let's see. In Mayor O'Malley's absence, I went to the SLOCOG meeting on April 1st, and there were just maybe 2 things of note. Our LTF funds are unfortunately dwindling, and gratefully this year, this fiscal year ending June 30th, because they held some money in reserves, basically we're going to be about $34,000 below what they had estimated, so not too bad. But next year, we're going to have a decline of $331,000. So that is unfortunate. Correct me if I'm wrong, Rochelle, I think that's not going to touch our transit needs. That just affects the extra money that we can put towards road improvements.
That is correct. Those monies have to be used for transit first, with any remaining funds to be used on roads. We've enjoyed a lot of success in recent years in being able to cover not only our transit needs, but also make a lot of progress towards repairing our roads. Feels disappointing that on one hand we just got our new sales tax, and it's a state thing, it's not something local or whatever, but we will have dwindling LTF funds.
I think the grateful thing is that we do have sufficient funds to cover our transit needs, and that's not necessarily the same with all of the other cities. Some of them use all of their LTF for transit, and so when LTF gets reduced, it puts them in a precarious position. So I'm glad that for us, while it doesn't feel like gravy compared to not meeting our transit needs, it is. The second thing is that Caltrans presented their California Transportation Plan 2040, and it was basically that SLOCOG was just going to be saying, you know, hey, yeah, we agree with this, and move forward, and kind of giving a stamp of approval. But what came up is that in their report, they talk about wanting to, you know, reduce vehicle miles traveled along with other things. So while they don't specifically mention that they're in favor of a VMT tax, a vehicle miles traveled tax, some of the public came forward and said, you know, look, if you're approving or going along with something like this, we're concerned that you're kind of giving that stamp of approval. So if Caltrans later says, hey, we're for a VMT, and look at everybody else who supports our plan. And so what we ended up doing as a board was just to do a receive and file. I do want to let the public know that if anybody wants to comment on the plan or to read the plan, you can go to California Transportation Plan, all spelled out, California Transportation Plan 2040.org. And you can see the plan. You can send them an email. They're even on Twitter. Any comments on that plan are due April 17th. So that deadline's coming up here in just a few days. Again, it doesn't specifically say that they're supporting a VMT tax. But if you want to, you know, voice your opinion on that or any other matter, please do so by the 17th.
Thank you. Councilwoman Fonsi.
Thank you. Most of the meetings on this list I will be going to this week. I have a LAFCO meeting on Thursday, and we have DRC, which I would like to invite the public to attend. That'll be at 1 o'clock at City Hall to discuss an affordable housing project, actually a very large one for the city of Atascadero. It'll be very interesting to review, and we'd like their input. I need to let the council know that there is a special air pollution control district meeting that's been called for this Thursday evening. This is highly unusual. They're normally every 6 weeks or so and in the morning. And this is because of a recent ruling by the Superior Court regarding the Oceano Dunes and Dust Rule. And they have found that the air pollution control district has exceeded their authority and has no authority to enforce any changes to the operation of the off-road vehicle park, per se. And so this will be a meeting to discuss in the public the decision, how this will be affecting those citizens that live up on the Oceano area and on the Mesa that are receiving some of that dust, and to decide whether the Air Pollution Control District Board will encourage the staff to appeal the decision up to the state Supreme Court, or will choose to live with this decision and find other ways of handling this. I see this as a political food fight. There will be liberals versus conservatives on this one, whether we go forward and appeal all the way or we don't. So if anyone has any interest, please let me know. And if you'd like to attend the meeting, it should be very interesting.
Thank you.
Well, as the council's liaison to the League of California Cities, I attended my Housing, Community, and Economic Development Policy Committee last week in Ontario. And actually, I have some very good news for you, Councilmember Moreno. There's actually a transportation bill that the League's been working for several years that is getting very close to pass or being crafted. But what it's going to do is it's going to raise gas taxes and DMV fees to raise 2.5 to almost $3 billion in the state per year for road maintenance and preservation. That money is going to be for city and county roads. So they didn't say exactly more of the exact points of the matter, but I was very excited to hear that because they're actually they're
finding a way. They realize the infrastructure of California's roads are deteriorating. The roads are getting very, very bad. So that was very encouraging to hear. Along with that, there's a lot of talk about water. And, you know, our water company is looking at the, I'm sure, I don't know if everyone has seen the story in the Trib about the different percentages that communities are going to be required to cut back. Yeah. I know we're looking at the issues of what the governor has laid out under the water company is, so I know that we'll have more fine points to be able to share. But we all know that this drought is ongoing and the snowpack is at 5%. So it's a very serious drought that we're in, and the governor took measures. So once we flush it all out, there'll be more information on that. So other than that, it was pretty much a little talk about oil by rail, and other than that, it was good to get together and be able to network and talk about these issues and for the state of California. And, you know, they have good elected officials that are fighting for our cities all across the state. So it was a good meeting.
Thank you. I think Councilwoman Mayor Pro Tem Moreno, you wanted to comment a little bit more on...
I was trying to find it here in the SLOCOG agenda, and it's not well tabbed. But we had looked at the legislative agenda, and there were a couple of items that were some legislation that is attempting to correct the rating of the transportation funds, because unfortunately what happens in, you know, many situations, I'm sure it's not just California and it's not just transportation, but money is, you know, supposed to be set aside and it's not legally restricted, so, you know, it's not in the famous lockbox, and it gets used to backfill general fund and things like that, and that's what's happening in California with transportation funds. And so some of the legislation pending right now or being moved forward is to try to correct some of that. So hopeful that they do, and any legislation going forward, I don't know if they can restrict it. I'm not as well versed in what that would require, except what we went through here. So,
well, I was just very encouraged with the fact that they realized that roads are in very bad condition and it needs to be addressed. So, and that was hopeful.
Yeah, no, very hopeful. I hope the state keeps the funds where they're supposed to be.
Yes, I agree.
Well, thank you. And as you say, there's been two variables on that. One with more efficient cars, of course, mileage increasing, the tax collected going that's designated for roads, that amount has declined. And as you said, over time, state often finds a way to redirect local money to somewhere else. And I appreciate Councilman Sturdivant's involvement with League of California Cities, because there's been a number of times we as cities have gone and done a good job being the David against Goliath to get things so pinned down that it protects local money, and we've been able to do that. I think it's kind of a fluke of a good luck for Atascadero on how vehicle miles traveled is being looked at, because on one hand, that is the criteria I use for allocating a lot of the federal and state funds at a local level, and it turns out in our situation is what we've always pointed out is that our biggest thing we could do for our environment in our community is to basically bring jobs, housing, and shopping closer to our community. If we provide the goods and services we all shop for elsewhere at home, not only is it good for business, we have the revenue to take care of our own city. It actually is the single best thing you could do for the environment, which means that's why so many of the funding for overpasses and other things puts Atascadero in a good position, because we're the city that's most out of whack with the vehicles miles traveled. So that's a plus. Simultaneously, you know, they are working on, I think, funds to counter that. And again, I think it's been wise with councils even before my time that have always fought for using the funds we've had, the local funds, for local roads. And we did benefit from that as a community. It's always been argued that, well, we should direct more of that towards regional transportation. But we recognize in our community, folks just can't take a bus in our windy roads out there in the hills. We're a automobile-based society, even the way E.G. Lewis laid the city out. So by having that buffer that we've been able to do more with roads in the past, it also has allowed, as our requirements for transportation and buses has increased,
we've had this categorical funding to take care of that, where other cities are having to pull money out of their budgets and redirect to transportation. We've had a buffer, so to speak. So it's been the best of both worlds. We made lemonade with what we got. So anyway, thank you for covering for me on a meeting or two. I got to take a week off and see my son get promoted to major at back in the Army, and so I missed a meeting or two. Thanks for covering. And congratulations, Bob, for taking on getting to judge chili. I, however, get to judge apple pie contest at Idler's. I think Councilman Moreno is joining me, and so is Debbie Arnold. So we said we'll take that one. So thank you. Any other council comments? We'll go to staff for any other reports or comments. With that, then, we are adjourned.